Richard X. Heyman on KUCI in Irvine, where for the next hour of programming, the opinions and views expressed are not necessarily those of KUCI, UCI, or University of California Board of Regents. Talking Animals Now, KUCI.
I
That's music from the Cocteau Twins, the song called Wolf in the Breast, as we ease into today's edition of Talking Animals on 88.9 FM, KUCI, and Irvine, and streaming live, of course, on the internet at KUCI.org. I'm Duncan Strauss, and I'll be with you until 10 o'clock this morning with our program that is devoted to all subjects in the animal kingdom. Right off the bat, I'd like to tell you that for the next hour, you can reach us directly by phone at 949-824-5824, 949-UCI, KUCI. And I absolutely urge you to use that number. Call us at any point in the show. I'm telling you, we love to get calls. Otherwise, we get a bit lonely here. It's like the Maytag repairman. It can be anything animal-related, of course, but heck, it can be other stuff. Hanukkah or Christmas gifts you want to tell us about. Boy, I sure got some neat presents, by the way, including some great books on animals, a CD of music by a dog named Sven, who plays all the instruments on the CD, no less, except the drums, of course. And, of course, we'll meet him in a subsequent show, absolutely, and his accompanist/drummer. And a number of other cool things related to my favorite animal, the elephants. So, anyway, but I digress. Other ways to be in touch include emailing us at talkinganimals@AOL.com. And checking out our wonderful website at talkinganimals.net. Again, that's .net, folks. So, meanwhile here at Talking Animals, we We're here primarily to learn about animals, animal issues from our guests, from news items, from your calls, from assorted other sources, but we're also here each week to celebrate animals through music, comedy, and other means. It's been over 6 months since we launched Talking Animals, and we've been enormously fortunate during that time to have a long string of terrific guests, including Dr. Sophia Yin, a veterinarian who's done pioneering research on dog barks and what they mean, Ian Anderson, the singer-songwriter flute player behind rock band Jethro Tull and something of an animal advocate and expert, Dan Matthews, who is vice president of communications at PETA, is the chief strategist of the organization's high-profile campaigns. We also had a freewheeling chat with Meryl Marco, the Emmy-winning television writer, author, and creator of Stupid Pet Tricks on The Letterman Show nearly 25 years ago. And not only are all these interviews archived on our nifty website at talkinganimals.net, but our string of exceptional guests continues today when we speak with Richard X. Heyman, an immensely gifted singer-songwriter, multi-instrumentalist, who's released a handful of albums, and while he may not be a household name, he should be. Rolling Stone has called him an undiscovered treasure, while Stereo Review has said he's a pop savant of the very first rank. More to the point, perhaps, for the purposes of Talking Animals, he's also a huge animal guy who's devoted much of his time in the last few years to rescuing animals all over New York City and beyond. We'll find out more about his rescue efforts, the other animals in his life, and, of course, his music when Richard joins us a bit later in the program. Meanwhile, Talking Animals, it's time for our weekly look at items of interest in animal news, and I want to remind you of the phone number to join us here on the show with your own comments and questions about animals. Not only this week's animal news items, of course, but also any other animal topic you care to discuss, announcements, observations, and, of course, any stories you might have spotted that you think we should be addressing. So all that would be most welcome at 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. So turning out interesting or important developments recently in animal news, typically these are local, regional, national, sometimes international stories of note that seem important to spotlight, and with any luck, to get your comments on and discuss. Okay, let's talk turkey, as it were. Starting off, as we almost always do here at Talking Animals, with a little note about Tiger Rescue. That's the facility that's been in the news off and on for months and months, really, now. It's in Colton, California, which is kind of near Riverside, Ontario, sort of in broad strokes. Anyway, it's a facility that for many years housed tigers and other big cats, other animals as well. The proprietor allegedly, set this up as a sanctuary, and that couldn't be in bigger, more vigorous air quotes. For those animals who had retired, allegedly, ostensibly, from TV and film work and other performance stuff. Anyway, it's a very long story. The short version is that the facility had long been neglected. Worse, not unrelated, the animals had long been neglected. So the proprietor is up on a string of very serious criminal charges, lots and lots of them. And that's been postponed a few times, that court date, so that's coming up to the first part of 2004. But meanwhile, many of those animals are still there and need to be cared for, of course, and looked after each day. So an amazing man named Chuck Tracy has stepped up in all senses of that phrase, leaving behind his own facility, the Wildlife Rehabilitation Center in Ramona, California, right near San Diego, and leaving behind, you know, his animals, his wife, his life, basically, to look after the animals at Tiger Rescue. So basically he does that with the help of an ongoing battalion of volunteers who drive in from all parts of Southern California and Northern California, as far as I know, and probably beyond at this point. But this is all by way of saying that, especially during the holidays when you want to, you know, maybe make an extra effort for your fellow man, fellow woman, fellow beast, if you could spare any day, weekend day of course, but weekday so much the better, to go out and help look after these animals. It's a matter of kind of cleaning their enclosure, watering them down, cleaning out their water tanks, feeding them, and otherwise making sure they're comfortable and happy. They're much better shape, much, much better shape since Chuck took over and all the volunteers have helped out. I've been out there a couple times, not as often as I would like, of course, but I really urge you, if you can find the time, email us at talkinganimals@aol.com. We'll absolutely hook you up with the the folks that coordinate that, and I guarantee you'll have one of the more amazing experiences of your life looking after these big cats and other animals there. So, meanwhile, of course, there are plans to relocate them, and some actual legitimate sanctuaries have agreed to take them. So they might have the space, but what many of them don't yet have are the enclosures to house the tigers and other cats. So now the key kind of mission is to get funds together to build and set up those enclosures. So along those lines, in this season of giving, charitable donations, etc., I'd like you to consider writing a check to help with the tigers and specifically with the enclosures. And if you could do so, you could cut that check, mark it, Save the Tigers, and send it to the Fund for Animals. Attention, Save the Tigers. Make sure it's marked both on the check and on the envelope so we know it's earmarked for the tiger and the enclosure efforts. Send it to 200 West 57th Street, New York, New York, 10019. That's the Fund for Animals. Attention, Save the Tigers, 200 West 57th Street, New York, New York, 10019. Along that sort of same line, but more locally, there's some awesome calendars that the Fund for Animals folks have put out. They feature some animals from the facility that Chuck and his wife Cindy Tracy operate, the Wildlife Rehabilitation Center that I mentioned earlier. But a lot of the pictures are tigers and other cats that have been living at, or still are in some cases, tiger rescue. So it's $10, just a mere $10. And that handles not only the calendar, but postage and handling and the whole nine yards. So that you can send to Cindy Tracy, T-R-A-I-S-I, at the Fund for Animals Wildlife Center. That's at 18740 Highland Valley Road, Ramona, California, 92065. Again, if you didn't catch those addresses, please check with us, talkinganimals@AOL.com, or you can call here right on the right here in the on-air studio, 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. And hot off the newswire, this is Associated Press. I saw just an hour or two ago before coming over to KUCI. Headlined, Animal Rights Activists Hit Streets for Alaska Protest. Headline here is Anchorage. Animal rights activists were taking advantage of the post-Christmas shopping in New York this weekend to hand out pamphlets calling for a tourism boycott of Alaska. Friends of Animals are angry about a decision by Governor Frank Murkowski to allow aerial wolfhens in the McGrath area. Save a wolf, sign a postcard, boycott Alaska, Friends of Animals worker Bob Orabona called out to the crowd rushing past Rockefeller Center. Orabona held a sign depicting a howling wolf with a crosshairs drawn over its chest. Alaska's planning a heart-stopping wildlife spectacle, the placard read. They call it management. We call it murder. Connecticut-based animal rights organization is staging 32 such demonstrations around the country in the last weekend of the year to protest the state's wolf control plan, which calls for shooting about 40 wolves in the McGrath area with the help of aircraft. The group printed 50,000 postcards addressed to Murkowski, calling the lethal program unethical and disgraceful, and a warning of a boycott. Your thoughts, your comments on that, if you have some, 949-824-5824, 949-UCI, KUCI. It's also time, as we do kind of in the middle, over animal news for a newly implemented feature. It's a brief quiz, one question, true or false, and yet you can win a prize by guessing the correct answer. Come on, you can't beat that. We're big on prizes here at Talking Animals, that's for sure. So, and in honor of Richard X. Heyman, our guest coming up momentarily, Talking Animals, very much into cats, cat efforts, other things too that I hear about. But I thought we'd ask this question. True or false? Listen closely. Cats use their whiskers to, quote, feel, unquote, their way around. So a mother cat will often bite the whiskers off her newborn kittens to keep them from wandering away from her. True or false? If you know the answer, 949-824-5824, 949-UCI, KUCI. First one calls in with the correct answer. That's right. You win a prize. And who'd have thunk that there be necessarily something positive in the animal world about Schwarzenegger taking office, but some people seem to think so. I'll read you just a little bit of a story that popped up either yesterday or Saturday, I can't remember now which, in the LA Times. Headline, Ferret Fanciers Turn to Governor for Pet Cause. Starts off, the t-shirt says it all. Hey Arnold, legalize ferrets. To underscore the point, it shows a ferret, a weasel-like creature banned in California since 1933, sniffing around Arnold Schwarzenegger's star on Hollywood Boulevard. Brunt told thousands of ferret fanciers it's a powerful image. Schwarzenegger was the only governor in the state's history who has co-starred with a ferret in a major motion picture. I'm sure there's not even a close contender for that honor, other than Arnold. And when decades of pleading with bureaucrats and legislators have failed to put the pet you love on the right side of the law, hope is where you find it. Many ferret folks in California, lawbreakers all, take heart in Schwarzenegger's role as a ferret-owning undercover officer in the 1990 film Kindergarten Cop. Others see him as just the take-charge guy they need to reverse the state's long-held impression of ferrets as terminators of endangered birds and other wildlife. Quote, he's worked with ferrets from Kindergarten Cop, so he knows they're not the man-eating creatures that the Fish and Game makes them out to be, said Mary Shefferman, the Smithtown, New York-based editor of Modern Ferret magazine. He would definitely sign a ferret bill once he gets through some of the more pressing issues on his desk. It would be a nice, warm, fuzzy kind of thing to do. Indeed. Have any thoughts on ferrets? Arnold Schwarzenegger. Where those two dovetail, 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. And lastly, for today's animal news, another thing I mentioned fairly regularly for the last several weeks, the Animal Rescue Site, which is indeed a website that you can visit daily. And if you click on the portion that says Feed an Animal in Need, that releases funds to do just that. It frees up monies for feeding animals at various rescue organizations and or monies devoted to other ways to help them. So it's the animalrescuesite.com, www.theanimalrescuesite.com. And you just go there and you can click and go every day. And the corporate sponsors and advertisers use the number of daily visits to donate food to abandoned, neglected animals in exchange for that advertising. So haven't heard a catch, a downside. If you do, please let us know. 949-824-5824-949-UCI-KUCI, or of course email talkinganimals@AOL.com. So it's time now to step into the comedy corner, the Talking Animals Comedy Corner. And as always, it's animal related stand up. And we're going to return to the work of one of our favorites here on Talking Animals. This is Brian Regan with Spiders and Bees, KUCI.
You know the ultimate in looking like an idiot? It's when you walk into a spider web, right? Because nobody else sees that spider web. They just see you walking off in the distance, suddenly flipping out for no reason whatsoever. You're just walking along, everything's fine, all of a sudden, no! Ah! Hey, did you see that guy? He just snapped. He was walking along, he just went nuts through that tree. Look, he's still doing it. I don't know what happened to him. It's the same thing when a little bee starts chasing you around. Nobody sees the bee, they just see you, you know, just kind of brushing them. Oh. People off in the distance. Hey, is that guy waving to us? Hey, how you doing? No!
Ah! All right, that was Brian Regan with Spiders and Bees from his live collection here on KUCI. The Comedy Corner is the weekly signature feature of Talking Animals. And I'm Duncan Strauss. You're listening to Talking Animals on KUCI 88.9 FM. As many of you know, we also stream live on the internet at www.kuci.org. Beyond that, it's an excellent, varied website with a schedule of all the programming, CD reviews, a list of upcoming bands playing live on the station, as well as special guests appearing on the talk shows, public affairs programs, and more. That's KUCI.org. And, of course, while we're talking about websites, we'd be remiss if we didn't once again mention our cool website, TalkingAnimals.net. Please try to check it out. It's .net, TalkingAnimals.net, And join the email list so we can keep you posted on upcoming guests and other announcements. And you'll also find archives and synopses of the shows, photographs, articles, all kinds of links, other audio pieces and more. So stop by, check that out. It's talkinganimals.net. So I mentioned earlier in the program that this week's guest is Richard X. Hammond. But before we proceed, I'm obliged to remind you that the opinions and views expressed in Talk Animals are not necessarily those of KCI, UCI, or the University of California Board of Regents. But anyways, again, our guest today, we're really excited, is Richard X. Hammond, an accomplished singer, songwriter, musician who's released a number of acclaimed albums. The All Music Guide notes that, quote, his albums are widely regarded in power pop circles as instant classics, unquote. In recent years, he's also become a real animal advocate, spending a great deal of time rescuing cats and other animals throughout New York City and beyond. We'll delve into all that momentarily, but first, this seems like the ideal moment to hear a Richard X. Hammond animal song, after which he'll join us live on the phone. So right now, this is Monica from Richard X. Hammond on KUCI. That's Richard X. Hammond and Monica from the Hey Man album. And this momentarily will be Richard live here on KUCI. Richard, are you there?
I am here.
Great. Thanks for joining us on Talk Animals today.
My pleasure.
So I've already filled the listeners in on some of your albums, and actually was fortunate enough the previous hour to be able to play some music filling in for someone. So I played a bunch of stuff from all your, well, at least three of your albums. So right. we're up to speed on some level, and yet there's so many more things I want to talk about, things that you've done or been involved with, not least, of course, just the great the albums and undertaking a series of animal rescue efforts in New York City, which I definitely want to delve into momentarily. But I always think it's interesting to kind of hear first about someone's history and the path that led them to their work with animals. So let me just start with, where did you grow up, and did you grow up with animals?
I grew up in New Jersey, mm-hmm. and our family had some dogs in, over a series of about 20 years. We had a couple of boxers, and never had a cat, never really experienced owning a cat until I was an adult, and that's when my animal rescue work began. As soon as we got our first cat, I fell in love with cats and just started to notice the stray cats in my neighborhood, and I just got involved and started to gather knowledge about what to do.
So there really wasn't, doesn't sound like sort of a long-standing thing that really just sounds like, you know, you had some animals when you were growing up, but really it sounds like much more as an adult this kind of really clicked. And
yeah, the connection didn't happen until I moved back to New York. This was in the early 80s.
Uh-huh.
And my wife decided to get a cat.
Okay.
On her own. And she went ahead and did it. And my first response was I didn't want a cat. I didn't understand the appeal of cats. I never experienced what it was like to have a cat, and I just didn't get it.
Mm-hmm.
And next day I came home, and there was a little kitten on our living room floor, and I just immediately fell in love. And my first words were, well, if we're going to keep this cat, we have to get a second cat.
Wow.
I want it to have a friend. I don't want it to be alone while we're out at work.
Talk so about coming around. Cat. Jeez. I mean, you went from, I'm not really necessarily into this, to, hey, this is cool. Let's get a second one.
It was instantaneous. And then I start to see stray cats down on the next block. This is in the East Village of New York City.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of vacant lots and courtyards behind buildings, and I would see stray cats that I never noticed before. And so at first, like many concerned people, the first instinct is to get them some food.
Sure.
But as time goes by, you learn that, you know, that's not enough. You have to get them off the street. You have to get them spayed and neutered and find homes for them. And it was just really a learning experience, and I got involved with some rescue groups, and now I'm kind of known in the city as the trapper guy.
So, well, let's just back up a little bit. So what was your first, you know, rescue effort specifically? I mean, where did it take place, and kind of what, just sort of walk us through that, because it sounds like, you know, much like when there was the kitten there that day you came home, it sounded like you were sort of pretty immediately hooked.
What happened was these kittens came from a gentleman in New Jersey we found, and they had the Village Voice, and we weren't, you know, real experience with cats, and we bought them on good faith, and it turned out after we had them vetted that they both had feline leukemia.
Mm.
And so we did everything we could for them, but they only, one lived to be two and the other lived to be a year and a half, and it was very tragic for us.
Wow.
And in that time I had been feeding some stray cats on the next block, and I noticed one of the cats was pregnant, and they were behind a fence that I couldn't get to them, but I used to stick food through there. And that mother cat turned out to be Monica, the song Monica.
Yeah.
And her name is Monica, but because it sounds like mommy cat. We used to call her mommy cat for a long time, and then when we came up with a name for it, we were too embarrassed to use mommy cat, so we changed it to Monica.
I see. So that was sort of a moniker, like an alias, really.
Alias. So then these two cats that we had, which were both very young kittens that when we first got them, they passed away, and we took in Monica, mm-hmm. and her litter of six kittens.
Wow.
And, that's how this started.
Jeez.
And finally learned how to trap cats and get them, you know, off the street to rescue groups. I've since, you know, limited my services to mainly, you know, what I call the front line trapping. I go out on rescues. I actually get the cats with a series of traps, some of which I had to invent to
oh, really?
Meet the circumstances.
Can you tell us a little bit about those? Because I only have sort of limited experience, you know, with the sort of basic humane trap that that we had to sort of use for a wild feral kitten that wandered in our garages.
Well, the main trap that I invented that's been very successful, I can't talk about because I'm in the process of getting it patented, actually.
Oh, good for you. All right. So, well, just say what you can, but yeah.
I can't really discuss that one, but yeah, I started with the basic tomahawk, have a heart traps,
mm-hmm.
and then I built some like box traps, traditional box traps that work with a string pull.
Okay.
Where you can get entire litters in at once, or you can pick and choose who you need to get.
Oh, really? So they're selective, kind of?
Well, because it works manually with a string.
Oh, okay, so you're nearby or someone's nearby operating it.
You get like about 20, 30 yards of string.
I see.
And when you get the cat inside the box that you want, you pull the string and you can get as many or as little as you want. So if you're looking for just the kittens, you wait until, you know, two or three kittens go in, then you pull the string.
Wow.
Many times I go on rescues for people that call me, and they have specific needs. Some people do spay and release rescues in New York, and there may be certain cats that have already been spayed and released, and they just want to get the ones they haven't gotten. So box trap usually works best for those.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to trap a cat and have a heart trap that's already been trapped that doesn't need to be. It's very traumatic for them.
Sure.
So I personally am not in favor of spay and release unless it's an absolute last resort.
Once a cat is trapped through one of your many methods, then what ideally do you think should happen?
Well, hopefully they can find a good loving home. That's
okay.
The ideal situation, of course.
So adoption, obviously, is always the first.
So, you know, they go to the vet. We have a very good vet here in New York, and named Dr. Cotter, and his wife is really astute at assessing cat's demeanors, and she can, within, you know, the first day of its stay there, pretty much determine if it's a true feral cat or if it's going to come around or if it can be socialized.
Mm-hmm.
And some people just can't deal with the feral cats, and if it's a true feral cat and it doesn't seem like there's any hope of it being socialized, there's a group of people that believe they should be just put back into the colony from where they came.
And is that where you do take issue, if I'm following you?
Well, like I said, it's a last resort.
Right.
I hate to see any cat out on the street in New York City.
Of course.
You know, it's not the greatest natural environment.
Sure.
They're really dependent on the feeders, and, these colonies can get out of hand.
Absolutely.
But, disease can spread. But it's better than leaving a colony totally unattended where they just multiply. That's the worst scenario.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So what's, how many, like in a given, let's say, week, since you've become kind of the go-to guy, it sounds like, I mean, how many sort of experiences, trapping kind of experiences would you typically have?
It varies, you know, by the season, but
mm-hmm.
I'd say I get calls just about every day.
Wow.
For rescues.
Yeah.
And, you know, depending, you know, in the winter, there's more of a kind of desperate need to get them off the street.
Sure.
Because of the weather. So I get a lot of frantic calls about cats out in the freezing cold.
Oh, yeah. Wow. And just generally, beyond just sort of developing the sort of expertise that you mentioned about traps, how has the experience kind of changed otherwise or evolved in the years since you first, you know, stepped into this fray?
In what way?
Well, what I'm wondering is, do you find the numbers are greater or just because you've delved into it? I mean, you're the go-to guy, but
right. It's a never-ending problem, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure this is a situation that takes place all around the world.
Sure.
But it's so multiplied in New York City.
Yeah.
You have the problem of people abandoning their cats, for one thing.
Right. I mean, like when they move or just when their circumstances change?
Different scenarios. Yeah. There's people that will get a kitten for their kids, and the cat becomes an adult, and they decide they don't want it anymore, and they just dump it out on the street.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
There's people that throw cats out windows. I mean, it's the most horrible things you can imagine happen in the city, and I'm sure everywhere else, but just being in New York where everything is so congested, you really feel the impact more.
Sure. Oh, jeez.
So it's a never-ending problem, but, you know, sometimes there's a light at the end of the tunnel. There's neighborhoods that can literally be cleaned up of stray cats if you're diligent.
Wow. Well, that's got to be encouraging then, right?
Yeah, if you really work at a specific neighborhood, you can pretty much control the stray cat problem.
Yeah. And along those lines, what ways would you say just the rescue efforts and other involvement that else has changed you? Like, what's been some of the primary effects on you over these years?
Well, the philosophy that I've had after a few years of doing this is, you know, how important one life is. And if you have the attitude that if you just save that one cat that day, you know, that's a major thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what keeps me going. Because it's so overwhelming. You go out there sometimes and you'll see a colony with 13, 14 cats or more.
Yeah.
Sometimes we get calls for these people that are known as collectors that are mentally ill people that just collect animals and they just get as many as they can and they don't keep them properly.
And then they can't look after them.
That is really distressing to me.
Sure.
But again, each cat you save, just to me, is an important rescue, and I feel really good about, you know, each cat I get off the street.
Absolutely, and I guess that's the way you have to look at it to kind of be...
You'd go insane, because, you know, when you first get started, when I did, and a lot of other rescuers have told me the same thing, you know, you have a very idealistic feeling that, you know, you can really solve the problem, save the world, and you realize very quickly you can't.
Yeah.
And so you develop that attitude of one cat, one life. And, you know, it's just, at the end of the day, it makes you feel, you know, it's worth doing.
Well, absolutely, because I guess you have to really sort of revel in the cat that you helped that day and not look at, oh, my God, the numbers are just staggering.
Right, especially when you think of, you know, the birth rate of the stray cats outdoors, you know, how many cats can be reproduced in
yeah.
a colony and just from that one cat.
The exponential
statistics.
Yeah.
Crazy.
For sure. So what, it sounds like you're kind of just called individually at this point, Richard, but are there still kind of organizations that you're sort of primarily affiliated with that we should know about?
Well, I do a lot of rescue work for a group here in the city called City Critters.
Okay. And is there a website or some way that people, if they wanted to kind of send a couple of dollars in or whatever,
sure.
could do so?
Their website is citycritters.org.
Okay.
They have a mailing address as well. That's P.O. Box 1345, Canal Street Station, New York, New York, 10013.
Okay. And that's citycritters.org for those who do want to go the
They're
online.
They're a tax-deductible
okay.
charity organization. I do a lot of rescues for them.
Great.
They take cats off the street and adopt them. They do a lot of adoptions through a store here now that has let them use their premises. It's called Petco, which has been working out well.
Oh, good. Good, good. Okay, so is that primarily the organization, or are there others? Because it sounds like you're
Well, that's the main one. There's other groups. There's mm-hmm. a group called Kitty Kind, which is also very good. And
okay.
I don't have information with them. I'm mainly associated with City Critters, but I freelance as a rescuer.
I see.
So I just get calls from either... private citizens or these rescue groups, and there's a number of them.
And you might have said this earlier, and I'm sorry if I missed it, but how long ago did you start, or in other words, how long have you been trapping? Because it sounds like you really recognize this as quite an expert at this point.
It's been about 20 years now.
Wow. Wow. That's
great.
Starting
in the early 80s.
Yeah. And at home, what's the current animal population?
Well, that I'm not at liberty to discuss.
Okay, all right.
I've
run into that.
Used to get. Yeah. It's lower than it's been.
It somehow exceeds the legal limit, let's just say, probably, right? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we're at the point now where we have the same group of cats we've had for years, and they're just going to kind of go naturally.
Sure, sure. Any notable personalities amongst... That crew that are living with you?
Well, the main thing is that they all get along very well together.
Mm-hmm.
It's very fortunate for us.
Yeah.
We have only one cat left from the original Monica family.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And, and that's Willie, one of the four brothers.
Okay.
He's the last surviving cat from the early 80s that we had.
Yeah. And then, obviously, there's been new members added to that family, but in numbers that we don't really want to...
Yeah, all of them have been from my neighborhood, my old neighborhood in East Village.
I see.
One story, there was a cat named Wheezy. She was a little calico kitten that we saw underneath a car on East 2nd Street in the middle of a torrential rainstorm. She was soaking wet and covered with fleas, and she's a tiny little kitten. Somebody abandoned her. And she had a polyp in her throat, so the first thing we had to do was have the surgery done to remove that. So we call her Wheezy because she's make this wheezing sound.
All right. Well, it seems quite self-descriptive. Yeah.
A great cat ever since, totally healthy.
Cool. And do you notice, Richard, I mean, I always find this interesting to talk to people that are kind of in the animal world the way you are. Do you find that, especially now, I guess specifically with the ones that live with you, that there's a certain different element to the way animals behave, with cats in this case, that have been rescued? Like, there's some other dimension to their connection with you. Almost, I mean, it sounds kind of corny, I guess, to say, like, that they appreciate it. But, I mean, do you find there's just something about their behavior where they really almost acknowledge that you've kind of given them a life that they otherwise obviously wouldn't have?
I would say yes to that. I do feel a certain vibe, an appreciation vibe, and it's hard to really determine what a cat's thinking.
Right, of
all
course.
The time, but you feel it.
Yeah,
you know, you can feel the love, and you know, like they, you know, how they say you have to earn a cat's love, and that is certainly true.
Yeah,
but they're very kind of obvious in certain ways about the way they feel about, you know, having a home.
Sure,
you can just feel, you know, when they come up in your lap and just the eye contact.
Mm-hmm. They know.
They seem to know.
Yeah. Cool.
They're the lucky ones. Of course, I've never had a non-rescued cat, so I don't know.
Right. I guess hard to compare. But certainly people have talked about this experience, you know, from that or you know, from adopting, you know, dogs or cats from, you know, from shelters, et cetera. And just, you know, if they have anything to compare it with, it does seem like there's just another element to that relationship, to that connection. So, but so Richard, so we're sort of nearing the end of our time, but I of course want to make sure we talk at least a little about music. First became a fan of your music with the release of Hey Man, which I know was, you know, I mean, that was about a dozen years ago or so, and that wasn't even, you know, that was, I was sort of late to the party at that point. But maybe you could just give us a quick overview of your career, how you got into music, and you know, who'd you, you know, grow up really loving, and who inspired you, and we'll get in a couple other questions like that afterwards.
Okay.
You start quite young, as I recall?
I started playing the drums when I was about 5 years old, believe it or not. And
wow.
I was into kind of big band jazz music. That's what my father turned me on to.
Wow.
And I really listened to a lot of Benny Goodman and Buddy Rich as a drummer and you know, just jazz in general.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got into the Beatles, and I became a huge Beatles fan.
Sure.
And then the whole British Invasion and the American folk rock, Bob Dylan and all that kind of classic rock. And so, you know, I kind of like changed my jazz drumming style into a rock style, but it always had a little bit of that pre-rock element in it. And at a certain point, when I got into my early 20s, I decided to learn to play the guitar. And so I taught myself guitar and some keyboards, and I started writing. And when, I guess it was in like the mid-80s, I just started to really get serious about trying to put out my own stuff. And I got a record deal, I think about 86 or so.
Mm-hmm.
And I put out about 5 albums now.
Cool. Yeah. Well, we heard from at least 3 of them prior to Talking Animals: Basic Glee, Cornerstone, and Hey Man. And you know, just great, great stuff. And by the way, I think too, before you launch your solo career as a drummer and I guess other playing other instruments. Among the people you play with, if I'm not mistaken, were Brian Wilson. Didn't you play drums with Link Wray for a number of years?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, and Jonathan Richman, and I guess keyboards with Benny King, among others. So
yeah, I just sessioned with him. Yeah, I've had some fun experiences and playing with Brian Wilson when he was promoting the Just Wasn't Made for These Times movie.
Oh, wow.
A few gigs in the promotion for that movie. And that was a lot of fun and a real great experience.
Great. Not to mention a few nutty moments here and there, I'm sure. But
of course.
Yeah. But
he's one
that's
of the
cool.
True eccentrics.
Yeah. And again, I guess Monica, as far as I know at least, is the only, with all the great music that you've written and released, is the only, I guess, at least that I'm aware of, song that's really about a cat or an animal so far. Is that...
That I've released.
Yeah.
I have a song on... When I was on Warner Brothers, I had a song called Even in This Room, which is on a kind of limited release. It's not even one of my albums, but it was on one of their releases for, like, a compilation.
Oh, like a sampler thing or something?
Yeah, something like that. And it's kind of just piano and vocal song about the rescue of Monica.
Oh, wow.
More specific.
Maybe I could track that down, man. That sounds cool. I'd love to play that on the show sometime.
But that's true. There's nothing specific, although, you know, it's in there.
Yeah.
My love of animals is in a lot of the songs.
No doubt. And if I'm not mistaken, I don't know if this is still true, but at one point, didn't you kind of dub your home studio Tabby Road?
Yeah, for the last album.
Yeah, that's great.
But the last album was the first one we did in our home studio, and we called it Tabby Road.
Beautiful. And working on some new music at this point, Richard, or what's where do things
stand?
Yeah,
I'm in the middle of a new album. We've got about 12 songs done so far.
Great.
And we're hoping to get that out.
Any guesses as to when that might
sometime be? Sometime in 04.
Okay, cool. We'll just stay tuned. We'll be patient.
Work on it. And in the meantime, we have basically it's the last album, and we put out a bonus record called Write Overs that goes along with Basically, which is the outtakes.
Oh, cool.
If anyone's interested in that, they can contact us.
Sure. Well, you got a really cool website. It's www.richardxheyman.com. So there's all kinds of info and about the records and, of course, about the cat and the rescue efforts and all kinds of stuff. So
don't forget the dogs. I mean, we've been talking about cats a lot. I just recently did a very interesting, just real quick, rescue out in
That's
Brooklyn.
That's great, yeah.
I ran across this very strange, eccentric couple who I think are so unorthodox, I don't know what their situation is, but they have three dogs that they refuse to bring inside. They leave them outside year-round.
Oh, my God.
And I was so concerned about it, I called the ASPCA, and I tried to get rectified, and somehow it fell under the guidelines of legality. And so I, with the help of a lot of friends that donated, we bought three insulated dog houses and got a bale of hay for the flooring, and the dogs each have their own house at least, so they're not out in the elements. And, you know, in New York City, you have to deal with a lot of strange situations.
This is just horrifying. So is there some reason that they can't be either compelled to bring them inside, or how can they still maintain care, quote-unquote, for those dogs if they refuse to bring them inside? I mean, how do they still belong to those people?
It's just a situation I'm working on now.
Okay.
I'm trying as hard as I can to get them to bring the dogs inside.
Oh.
But, you know, in New York City and everywhere else, you have different situations that, you know, take sometimes unorthodox solutions, and we're working on trying to.
Yeah, it's amazing, though, isn't it?
What we can for these dogs.
Yeah, the laws locally and beyond, all the way up to the federal level, sometimes when it comes to animals, are insane with the loopholes. I mean, I just can't believe that people could treat their animals this way and then still be allowed to retain them. You know?
I know. I have.
Wow.
A little bit of a problem with that myself. Often wondered, you know, why the ASPCA doesn't seem to have a little more compassion when I call them with some of the horror stories that I run into.
Yeah.
But
well, part of the problem is the laws don't have enough teeth, as it were, it seems like, for people to be able to clamp down on.
Right. They're very by the book,
yeah,
the ASPCA, and when you call their police force, they just have certain lines that, you know, if the animal doesn't go beyond that, they won't confiscate the animal.
Wow.
So this situation, we're just kind of working step by step. First thing I wanted was just an immediate solution, because they absolutely would not bring these dogs inside, so we got the insulated dog houses as the first step. And I was told by many rescuers that hay, you know, to put hay down,
mm-hmm.
which insulates their body heat.
Sure.
On the floor. So that's the first step. Now I'm going to keep working on it.
And Richard, specifically in this case, is there either at your website or City Critters, is there somewhere if someone was listening and wanted to, you know, send a few dollars to help with? I mean, obviously, I guess I don't know if it came out of your own pocket. The places that the dogs are now sleeping in, but I mean,
what I did is I initially with a friend purchased a dog house,
mm-hmm.
and realized that I would be able to afford, you know, to get three good quality dog houses. So I put an email out and I got a lot of donations, and I directed the donations to City Critters.
Okay,
because anything in excess of a specific rescue will go directly to the care of the cats and dogs that they do rescue.
Oh, great.
And they have mounting vet dolls. They really do a thorough job. They have every cat vetted, spayed, neutered, shots, leukemia, and AIDS tested. And then they foster them until they get a good home for them.
Wow. That sounds like a really great place.
Let me just give you their address one last time.
Sure.
I don't mind.
Of course.
It's City Critters, P.O. Box 1345. Canal Street Station, New York, New York, 10013.
Great. And it's also for their website, citycritters.org.
Right.
All right, Richard, thank you so much for joining us on Talking Animals.
My pleasure, Duncan.
Informative and cool, and we'll look forward to the next album in the next few months. And good luck with the rescue effort. That's really cool work that you're doing. Thank you so much.
Thank you, and thanks for the support.
Absolutely.
Appreciate
thank
it.
You. Take care. Bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, Richard X. Heyman. Again, I want to thank him for joining us today on Talking Animals. His website is richardxheyman, HEYMAN.com. Again, the City Critters website, citycritters.org. And the mailing address for City Critters or anything else that we talked about, you can check with us at talkinganimals@AOL.com, and we'll fill you in on any details you want to double check that you missed otherwise, etc. So I'm Duncan Strauss. You are listening to Talking Animals on KUCI and Irvine 88.9 FM, streaming live by the internet at KUCI.org. And it's time for Name That Animal Tune. And I think you know the basic scoop. We'll play a little song, a little snippet of it at least. You'll try to determine what it is. Of course, in this case, the tunes are always animal-related, usually just by virtue of one or more animals being part of the song title. Occasionally, it's a bit more indirect than that. So anyway, see if this rings a bell. The first person to call in to identify it does win a prize. That's right, a prize. And so it's 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. See if you know this one. I mean, this, I have to say, is arguably like a belated Christmas gift for me on the order of asking who's buried in Grant's tomb. But we'll see. See if you can identify it. It's Talking Animals on KUCI.
A little white duck sitting in the water, a little white duck doing what he oughter. He took a bite of a lily pad, flapped his wings, and he said, I'm glad I'm a little white duck sitting in the water. Quack, 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 quack. There's a little green frog.
Come on, that's got to ring some bell, huh? Depending on when you grew up, depending on if you have youngsters, come on. All right. Well, you can still call in 949-824-5824, 949. All right. Well, I'm Duncan Strauss. We've just about reached the end of this week's edition of Talking Animals. I want to remind you that the views and opinions expressed on the show are not necessarily those of KUCI, UCI, or the UC Board of Regents. I want to thank again our guest, Richard X. Heyman. Hold on. I got somebody calling. Let's slap him right on the air, shall we? Hi, you're on the air. It's KUCI.
Hi, this is Jim from Irvine.
Hi, Jim from Irvine. Are you calling with a guest on Name That Animal Tune?
Name the tune. I know the artist.
All right. Well, you know what? Under the circumstances, we're in a generous holiday mood. We might even give you that. Who's the artist?
Burl Ives.
All right. And want to take a stab what the song was?
The little black duck, the little something duck.
Oh, my God, so close. Well, that then you definitely get a prize because it was the little white duck, and
little
it was
white duck,
definitely
yeah.
Burl Ives. So, Jim, are you an animal person yourself? Do you have an animal living with you?
Yes, I do. German Shepherd.
Okay, cool. What's the German Shepherd's name?
Cindy.
Cindy, cool.
And I did buy her from a rescue place.
Oh, great.
3 years ago.
Excellent, excellent, excellent. Well, Jim, let me reach into our little bag of prizes. And let's rattle off a few possibilities. One, by the way, we have a few different really cool calendars, including, I don't know if you're listening earlier in the show, but one of the calendars we're offering is the one for Tiger Rescue, the Fun for Animals one that raises funds for them. So
mm-hmm.
I can offer you one of those.
All right.
I can also, we have a couple, we have a lint roller, which I don't know if Cindy leaves much hair on the your clothes.
Yes, she does.
So that might be a cool possibility. We have an Ian Anderson CD. He was a guest on our show a few months back.
Mm-hmm.
We have a copy of a book for Bee, The Story of the Beagle Who Changed My Life by Kristen von Kreiser, who was also a guest on the show. I got other cool stuff. Anything grab you so far, Jim, in the way of the prize?
The lint roller.
Okay, cool. I'll tell you what, if you could email us at talkinganimals@aol.com. With your info, I'll get in touch with you and get your lint roller, and you'll be all squared away, and so will Cindy, for that matter.
Okay, talkinganimals...
@AOL.com.
@AOL.com.
Right, cool. Congratulations, thanks for calling, thanks for listening, and we'll get you that lint roller.
Great.
All right, thanks, Jim.
Thank you.
Okay, see ya.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, again, I want to thank our guest... Richard X. Heyman, of course, want to thank Jim for listening and calling in and winning. Name that animal, Tim. I also want to thank you all for listening. I hope you'll join us next Monday in Talk Animals when we'll feature a fascinating but as yet unbooked guest from some part of the animal world. That's next Monday, January 5th. By the way, other great public affairs show on KUCI include just today alone, the Serena Sharp Show, which, of course, precedes Talking Animals. I filled in for her, but that's normally here at 8 o'clock on Monday mornings. My show, Talk Animals, and at 5 p.m. we offer Counterspin, followed by, at 5:30, by Planetary Radio. And that's just Monday. At Planetary Radio, by the way, is Matt Kaplan. Cool, cool show. That's at 5:30 on Monday. So anyways, that's just one day alone. There's great public affairs programming and talk shows and stuff like that virtually each weekday, 8 to 9 in the morning, 9 to 10 again. And then typically from 5 to 6 in the afternoon on weekdays here on KUCI. On the music side of the KUCI schedule, I also host a show called The Dead Air Zone, Thursdays from 4 to 5 p.m. So when you have a chance, check that out, please. And again, I want to urge you to check out our nifty website, talkinganimals.net. When you have a chance and to get there, please sign up for our email list so we can alert you to guest bookings and other announcements. And I want to encourage you to email us with comments, guest suggestions for the show, ideas about show topics, songs, comedy bits, news stories, anything else you'd like to pass along at talkinganimals@AOL.com. I also want to definitely urge you to stay tuned for Jeff Scott, The Blues Disease. And as always, we're going to close out things here today with an animal-related tune. This is the Eels with a song called Dog Face Boy. Again, we urge you to catch the Blues Disease. We'll be infecting you momentarily. This is 88.9 FM KUCI in Irvine. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks for listening. Happy New Year. Catch you next week on Talking Animals.
That's the last time I cry. You don't know what it is to be a friend now. Till I walk beside you on the street now. Mom won't shame me. Jesus can't save me. Dog face. Sorry.